This is On Your Money. I'm Joy Cardine with financial planner Kevin McKinley, who has information and advice today on the recent stock market surge and what it means for investors, how to reduce your 2012 tax bill, and answers to other personal finance questions, including yours, at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to onyourmoney@wpr.org. Kevin McKinley is a certified financial planner, managing member of McKinley Money, LLC, and he joins us from our studios in Eau Claire. Hello, Kevin.
Hello, Joy.
And happy Fat Tuesday to you.
Well, hey, I put on a few pounds after the holidays, but I'm doing my... Oh, yes, this is a sanctioned holiday. Yes. I'm sorry. Forgive me. Yes, same to you.
Yes. Are you going to chow down on any good food that you're going to give up for Lent or anything?
Well, about a year ago at this time, I was provided with a piece of cake that... I had a very scarring experience, and it had a baby inside of it. And so that has kind of doomed a lot of chowing down that I do during Mardi Gras. I don't know if you know anything about that or not.
I do. But, Kevin was visiting the Wisconsin Public Radio studios in Madison last year around this time, and we had a king cake. And that little baby that's in a king cake, I think it's supposed to mean good luck, but it's kind of scary when you bite into it.
Yeah, and be clear, it's not a live baby. It's a little plastic replica.
Yes, I'm glad you clarified that.
I don't want to get emails. Thank you. Yes, but still, now every birthday I've had with my family in the last few months, I'm delicately probing each piece of cake with a fork, just wondering what kind of human is encased within. So thank you. You've done that to me.
Well, I hope that everyone has a happy Mardi Gras, Fat Tuesday, and maybe some folks are celebrating this stock market surge. As this stock market has run up recently, a lot of smaller investors are wondering, Kevin, should we get in, get out, or stay put?
It always is an interesting time when the indices, if you will, in this case the Dow Jones Industrial Average, flirts with these highs. It's right around 14,000 right now, and the high of the index is about 14,165. The Dow has basically doubled in the last 4 years since the economic crisis of late 2008 and 2009. And what's happened is the Federal Reserve has lowered interest rates in an effort to stimulate the economy, but also what has happened is that stocks have become a more attractive investment, as have long-term bonds, which has helped boost up the prices of those. And so it's very tempting when we've avoided some of these crises that were in front of us in the last few weeks. The election is over. The fiscal cliff has apparently been avoided. Individuals said, you know what, I'm tired of not making any money on my money. I'm going to jump in. Things sound good. Stocks are going up. And they did in January, according to TrimTabs. Individual investors put $77 billion into long-term stock investment funds. That's $23 billion higher than the previous record, which was set in February of 2000. But even though people are getting excited and getting into stocks, there's definitely some reasons that you should be careful right now.
Well, with the fiscal cliff being avoided, the economy looking a little bit better, why the caution?
Well, this kind of sentiment, as I mentioned, these huge inflows into stock funds, the last really big high in the stock market was in February of 2000, when a lot of people were pumping money into stocks. So the sentiment is typically seen at higher points in the cycle, not at the bottoms. We still have other economic issues. Unemployment is still hovering close to 8%. A lot of people who are employed are still underemployed. We have other economic concerns. It looks like earnings might be slowing down, both here and abroad. And also, we've got this sequester looming, which is going to mean across-the-board spending cuts by the government. And that's March 1st, which is 16 days away. And so between that and between the age growth in both the economy and in the markets, it's, you know, it's nothing that's this looming disaster, but it's just, it seems to be a lot closer to the high in the cycle rather than the low point of it.
Mm-hmm. Well, as we know, we have endured the past few financial downturns. Why worry about the next one?
Well, this one might be a little more severe, in part because a lot of the problems are intractable. You know, many times stock prices have been boosted up in the late 90s by technology stocks, internet, et cetera. And then we had the housing boom, which helped boost the economy and therefore asset prices. the problems that we're facing right now are a little more intractable, and there aren't as many solutions out there right now because we've lowered interest rates down to almost zero in many cases. So it's going might be harder to fix if another problem turns around. Plus, and this is more important, we're all older now. And we're more likely to be closer to using whatever money we've been saving for retirement or for college or some other big purchase that's coming up. So the next downturn may jeopardize not only those investments, but also those other sources of income. We saw a lot of people who not only lost money on investments during the last downturn, but lost their jobs, their pension checks were cut. And if we do go through another economic downturn here, Social Security's stability is going to be threatened greatly because more people are older and are going to be claiming more on it, and less people are going to be paying into it.
Yeah, darn it all anyway, Kevin. I remember when retirement was some point in the future that you couldn't even see, and now here it is.
You're thinking about it.
Yeah.
Not every day, but thinking about it.
Yeah. So then would you tell most investors to stay away from at least riskier investments right now?
Not necessarily. People who can answer yes to several of these questions posed should probably still allocate some of their money to stocks. First of all, if you need the growth in the investments to accomplish your goals. Now, important, this is not want the growth. This is need the growth. Second, if you will not need any of this money for at least 5 years, because that's how long many downturns can last, if not longer. If you are going to be contributing money over that time, meaning you have an at-work retirement plan or an IRA or a college savings plan that you're going to be adding to on a consistent basis, at least you'll be taking advantage of those prices dropping by buying a bigger share of the portfolio at the time with your regular additions. And finally, and this is the most important one, if you can handle a 30 to 40% or more drop in the value of the specific asset, both financially and emotionally and psychology. If you can answer yes to all those questions, then yeah, you know, stocks are a nice long-term way to make a decent rate of return. But if you say no to any of those things, you might want to hold off for a while.
Mm-hmm. And if you already have some money in those stocks right now, do you hold tight or do you yank it out?
I prefer it more to be part of an asset allocation, meaning you have a certain percentage of your money in stocks, some in bonds, some in cash. And if you are worried about them running up, maybe you shave off some and put more into more conservative investments like cash or bonds or bond funds, which do have their issues but are still less volatile likely than most stock funds.
Got it. Kevin McKinley is the managing member of McKinley Money LLC, a registered investment advisor with offices in Eau Claire and Madison. Kevin does not intend to provide personalized investment advice through this broadcast and does not represent that the securities or services discussed are suitable for any investor. Investors should consult with their own financial advisors prior to making any investment decisions. With that being said, if you have a question for Kevin, 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to onyourmoney@wpr.org. It's time now for the On Your Money email bag. And Kevin, in an email, Janice says, "Hi, Kevin. I love your program. I love your program with joy on Tuesdays. Thank you, Janice. And I set my timer so I don't miss it. I've emailed you a question in the past, but you did not answer. Uh-oh. Am I correct in thinking that once I reach 70 and a half, regardless of my income, my Social Security benefits will not be penalized? In other words, will the earnings ceiling that determines how much of my benefits are taxable be removed? Can you tell me where I can find my answer in print?"
Well, Janice, yes, and thank you very much for your kind words and false praise, and we're apologizing to you for not getting to your question. We do get a ton of questions, both in terms of calls and emails, and we try to get to all the ones that we can, and especially if it's something that we think the answer will be fairly general and usable by the other listeners, but sorry, we can't get to them all. But however, we have gotten to yours.
Yeah. So, what about Janice's question? Can you answer that?
I can answer it, and the answer is no. There is no removal of potential taxation of Social Security benefits at 70 and a half. What she might be thinking of is 70 and a half is the age at which required minimum withdrawals from IRAs are scheduled to begin. You have to start taking money out every single year after April 1st of the year after you turn 70 and a half, and then you're required to take those out every single year. So she might be mixing up those two numbers and the issue of how it might affect the taxation of Social Security.
All right, I'm sorry. So 70 and a half is the required age to begin the IRA mandatory distributions, but has nothing to do with Social Security benefits.
That's correct.
Okay, I got it. How does the IRS determine if Social Security benefits are taxable anyway?
Well, it's generally not affected by age. There's a formula where you add half of your Social Security income plus all other income, including tax-free bonds, but not including distributions from Roth IRAs. And then you get that figure, and if you're single and the number is over $25,000, 50% of your Social Security income is considered taxable income, and that number is $32,000 for married couples filing jointly. If it's over $34,000 from that formula for singles or $44,000 for married couples, then 85% of the Social Security checks are considered taxable. Now, again, that's not taxed at 85%. It's just that 85% of the amount is considered taxable income.
So where can Janice or anybody else for that matter see this with their own eyes?
We'll put a couple links up at onyourmoney.com. One is ssa.gov/planners/taxes, and the other is IRS Publication 936. And again, we'll have both of those links up at onyourmoney.com later on today.
I'm Joy Cardine with Kevin McKinley, Certified Financial Planner, Managing Member of McKinley Money, LLC. Our number, if you have a question for Kevin, 1-800-642-1234. You can email us. Also at onyourmoney@wpr.org. Andy in Gurnee, Illinois is with us. Hi, Andy.
Hi, how are you?
Really good. How are you?
Great. And I just wanted to say thank you, Joy. Your show is always fascinating. Yeah. And I appreciate Kevin being on it every week.
I do too. Thank you, Andy. So what's your question?
My question is, as Kevin was saying, you're pulling money, possibly scooping money off the top of equities that are in the market because the market is at an all-time high. What do you consider liquid assets for that? You're talking about cash. Is cash money markets, are they equivalent?
Yeah, that's a great question, Andy. Cash, I would consider checking accounts, saving accounts, money markets, and generally certificates of deposit, especially if the CDs have a defined penalty for early withdrawal. And the reason I make that difference is because if you buy a CD through a brokerage account or something, many times that's just a bond that if interest rates go up and you have to sell the CD before it comes due, you may lose some money on it, and it may be substantial if interest rates go way up. Whereas with a CD at a local bank or credit union, generally they just have what's known as a substantial penalty for early withdrawal, but typically it's only 6 months to a year of interest. So it's a little ding, but it's typically capped. So yes, I'd also throw savings bonds in there as well. Just about anything that you can get access to fairly quickly and know fairly certainly what that dollar amount will be. That all would fit into the cash.
Fantastic. Thank you so much.
Yes, thank you, Andy, for the call. We'll take more of your calls in just a moment. If you have a question, a personal finance question for Kevin McKinley, 1-800-642-1234, or email us onyourmoney@wpr.org. This is On Your Money on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This is On Your Money. I'm Joy Cardine with financial planner Kevin McKinley. Coming up, how to reduce your 2012 tax bill. That's coming up during this edition of On Your Money. But first, two more of your personal finance questions. 1-800-642-1234 or email us onyourmoney@wpr.org. Deborah in New Berlin is with us. Hello, Deborah.
Hi, Joy and Kevin, right?
Yes. Thanks for calling. Do you have a question for Kevin?
Yes. Is it Kevin? Yes, it is. Okay, good.
A couple of weeks ago, you had a guest on. I think it was, I can't remember who she was, but she said something that intrigued me, and I haven't been able to find the answer since then. And it's regarding long-term care insurance premiums. I think she said that they're deductible as a medical expense. Is that true or is that not true?
Yeah, that is true. It can be deductible as long as it fits into the limits for tax deduction of medical expenses, which medical expenses are deductible right now to the extent they exceed 10% of your adjusted gross income, and it's 7.5% if you're 65 or older. And so that means that you can deduct, and they actually set it at a dollar limit. For instance, people 61 to 70. In 2013, you can deduct up to $36.40 of premiums, which is about $300 a month, which is about what a couple of long-term care policies usually cost. So you can deduct it, but you do have to figure it into your medical expenses, and it's only to the extent it exceeds a portion of your income, which is tough for people to do. And it can be one more way, Deborah, to save some money on taxes, but I would not buy long-term care insurance solely for the tax deduction. It's one more little incentive.
Thank you, Deborah, for the call. Eric in Appleton is with us now. Hi, Eric.
Hi. Thanks for taking the call. You know, I grew up poor, and I'm not poor now. And one of my rules for not being poor is beware financial planners. I love the information I get, but almost uniformly, and I deal with a lot of them because I own a company with almost 50 employees, and I have my own portfolio, is it's very conservative, retrospective advice, one size fits all. And the two areas specifically I disagree with Kevin, and I listen to you every week, is I love having competing financial planners. So I do have half my personal assets with one and half with another. And I'll go to one and say, you know, my other one says, this mutual fund you have me in has done good, but it's so big, you're basically buying the market. You could buy an index fund cheaper. How do you respond? and I get way better service when I play them off each other. I don't hide anything. Everybody sees everything I have. And the other area, Kevin, I disagree with you, is short-term savings. Just like if you own a business, most businesses do not have a lot of short-term savings. They have cash flow and they have credit management. And if you run your family like you run your business, you have good credit. You don't need a lot of short-term savings. If something bad happens, that's what you have your credit for. If something really bad happens, you have your credit to manage and to restructure your portfolio. If something really, really bad happens, your short-term savings isn't going to help you anyway. So you might as well get your money working for you and plan for success, not plan for failure.
So, Eric, do you want your own show? I'm just
kidding. Well, I'm obviously rehearsed.
No, I'm just kidding. But anyway, Eric,
Yet. When did we start accepting calls that disagree with me? I didn't get that memo.
I got to give a memo to Cynthia. No, what is what's the disagreement
fragile.
Though? I'm not.
Well, no, the disagreement is Eric probably heard, and I do actually agree with this. Eric said he has two financial planners, and he works them against each other. I would never, as a financial planner, enter into that agreement, much in the same sense that if my wife said, hey, Kevin, I figured out if I get two husbands and get you working against each other to see who is going to share my bed that night, I think that you'd both perform much better and I'd be a lot happier person. So I wouldn't agree to that, and I wouldn't agree to the financial. But it's Eric's money, and Eric's free to do with it what he wants. And if the financial planners actually agree to that arrangement, more power to all three of them. The second thing about the cash is Eric.
I guess my response to that is, you know, I work in the health profession, but if I went to a surgeon and I said, well, you know what, I value your opinion, but I'm going to get a second opinion, and that surgeon says, no, I'll never have a patient who's willing to get a second opinion. I would never use that doctor. Same thing with lawyers, same thing with any other professionals. A good professional should be able to handle
It's different to get a second opinion.
Second opinion rather than have two surgeons operating on the patient at the exact same time. And that's the problem, and especially with investments. One financial planner could be selling something that the other person could be buying, which not only can create a little bit of an overlap, but it can create a conflict in terms of taxes. So let's get past that. The savings issue, I'm glad that you are confident enough and in a position where you're not worried about that, but you have a lot of control over your situation, part because you own your company. You have a ton of responsibility on your shoulders as well, not just for your own well-being, but also for your employees and for your customers or clients. Many people in the world today do not have that same type of control. And no matter how hard they work and no matter how good they do at their job, they may not have that job due to forces completely beyond their control. And when they do, all of those things about being able to get access to cash. They won't be able to borrow it. They investments will probably go down. The same things that that cause investments to go down generally jeopardize economic certainty and employment factors. And so people who, even in your case, Eric, as a business owner, I would say, hey, you probably, sounds like you have a great stock in the form of your business that you own. Why would you also then need more growth outside of that business other than if it were, say, in your retirement savings? I'd rather have you have as much cash on hand so that you can not only weather downturns for yourself and your family and your employees, but also so that you can take advantage of opportunities. So let's say one of your competitors and you are both going through a downturn. You've got the cash on hand that they don't have. You can not only survive longer than them and outlive them, but you may be able to buy them with some of that cash that you have on hand. So cash, to me, is an insurance policy. And I've done this for 25 years. I've gone through thousands of different people's situations, and especially the people I tend to work with, which usually are kind of on the cusp of retirement or have just retired. Their situation is they should usually hang on to what they have rather than trying to double it and risk losing half of it, because they're not going to be making very much money in the form of earned income down the road.
Thank you, Eric, for the call. Hey, that was kind of exciting, Kevin. Maybe a new feature, the Debate Kevin segment of On Your Money.
Yeah, that sounds real fun. Yeah, I can't wait to. I love arguing with people. It's one of my favorite things to do, especially when they call me up and call me out. I really appreciate that. Let's look forward to that.
You did a great job. You did a great job defending yourself. Now, everybody
there's a good point. Eric actually has very good points, too. I mean, very articulate and put them very well, so you did a good job, Eric.
Yeah. I'm Joy Cardine with Kevin McKinley. This is On Your Money. If you have a question for Kevin, we won't take any more arguments for Kevin, but if you have a question for Kevin, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to onyourmoney@wpr.org. Sandra in Appleton is with us now. Hello, Sandra.
Hello. Hi, Kevin. I'm calling regarding a HUD low-income loan that I obtained from my city. And the actual cost of my renovations were $6,975, and the city charged me $10,750 for this loan, which means I paid 54% interest on a low-income loan.
Oh, bummer.
Is there anything that I signed the mortgage note? Unfortunately, when I came and talked to the people, I had no idea that I was going to have this additional money added on as an administration fee. But 54% of the loan seems ridiculous to me. Is there anything that can be done regarding this?
Was it added on by the city, or was that was there a private lender or something involved, or how did
no,
this work?
The HUD funds are given to the city to use for rehab for low income people, and I called HUD and they said the city can charge whatever fees they want, but I have a booklet here in terms of the homeowner rehab loan program, and it doesn't say anything about adding on fees like this. It says additional fees may be incurred for title searches, filing fees, additional cost of rehab, but nothing to this extent. And I don't know what to do about this. I'm really upset. You know, I'm low-income.
I don't blame you.
Pardon?
But we don't blame you.
I said I don't blame you. Yeah. I would ask, for that amount of money, it might be worth it to spend an hour with an attorney and just say, can you look through this agreement and see if I missed something and something that was legal here? And then, go back and say, this really seems kind of crazy. What kind of program would charge, practically loan shark interest rates on something that's, in theory, a government-sponsored program, both locally and nationally, to try to do this? So if you have a friend who's a lawyer, you can find one locally and just say, look, I want to bring this in. It's going to cost a couple hundred dollars or something, but just have them look at the contract and say, did I miss something here that would allow me to incur all these extra charges?
Good luck to you, Sandra. I'm Joy Cardine with Kevin McKinley. This is On Your Money, and it's time for Smart Assets. And although we're well into 2013, Kevin, there's still some time to reduce the tax bill for 2012?
Absolutely. If you haven't filed your taxes yet, even if you have, you can go back in and get an extension. But many people are going to be scrambling to get their information together, in part because there was such a delay of closing the books for 2012 with all the government foo-fara that was going on and coming up with the new numbers for 2013. So most of the things that can save you some money in your 2012 taxes did happen last year, meaning that, you know, the door's closed. But there are still a few things that you can do right now and before the you file your taxes to cut what you pay for the 2012 year.
All right, so where do I start?
You might want to look at your deductions. The standard deduction is $11,900 versus $5,950 for singles. About two-thirds of people take the standard deduction, and usually that's because they just don't have enough itemizable expenses to offset that standard deduction. But sometimes it's because people just never bother to look at their lives and see all the money that they paid and if indeed some of those deductions can be included to get to a level that's higher than the standard amount, specifically mortgage interest, some points maybe if you refinanced in the last year, any state and local taxes that you might have paid, especially property taxes. If you paid investment management fees to a financial advisor or planner, those can potentially be tax deductible. And as we referred to earlier, medical expenses that you incurred that you had to pay for out of pocket that exceed a level of your adjusted gross income. And you can go to IRS Publication 529. IRS.gov 529, and it will give you a list of all the different expenses that you can use that could potentially reduce what you owe in the next few weeks.
All right, so what can we still do now to cut that 2012 tax bill?
Well, if you are working and you have a job, you definitely want to at least consider opening up a Roth IRA if you qualify. And generally, about 95% of workers, their income is low enough where they do qualify to open up a Roth IRA. The contributions are not tax deductible, but the future earnings are, and then the money, of course, will be tax-free when you pull the money out in retirement. Better yet, you may still qualify to, even if you have a plan at work, like a 401k, if your income is low enough, you may still be able to open up a tax-deductible IRA for the 2012 year. And if you have a spouse, even if the spouse doesn't work and have a retirement plan, you can still have, if you're married, you can still use that spouse as the basis for another contribution to an IRA, Roth IRA. And there is a special credit that a lot of people don't know about that could cut your taxes even further for any type of retirement plan contribution that you make, either a 401k, 403b last year, or an IRA or Roth IRA that you'd make before the tax deadline this year.
Ooh, what's this top secret credit?
it's the Savers Credit, and basically it's for lower to middle income filers, but any deposit that you've made to any retirement account that occurs for the 2012 tax year, and again, that can include IRAs and Roth IRAs that you might make right now, you can get a reduction in your tax bill from anywhere from 10 to 50 cents for every dollar you put in. Mm-hmm. And you can get the form. It's form 8880 at IRS.gov. 8880 at IRS.gov. And that's the Savers Credit. So even if you say, well, I'm going to put a $2,000 into a Roth IRA, you might end up saving $100 to $200 or so on your income taxes, and then you can always pull that Roth IRA contribution back out whenever you want with no taxes or penalties and do whatever you want with it.
All right, so besides the Savers Credit, any other tax breaks for listeners?
Well, this was for parents out there, all those expenses that you're forking over to raise these kids, there are a ton of tax credits out there. The Earned Income Tax Credit, the Child Tax Credit, the Child Care Tax Credit that you can use to offset what you help pay for a child's care while you are actually working. And then finally, there are several different credits and deductions for higher education expenses whatsoever. Now, keep in mind, as a parent of three children, the tax breaks are not large enough to justify having another child. It's close. But we waited out, and we ran a spreadsheet, and we decided, nope, it's not going to be worth it. So we decided not to have another child.
Well, you know, as someone who has very expensive dogs and cats, I would like to see a tax credit for this.
They're my children.
I know they are. Well, all right. So speaking of saving money on taxes, you also have a special offer to listeners regarding an upcoming show?
That's right. The membership drive on February 19th begins, and we will be offering the On Your Money Mini Money Book, 20 Tax Trimming Tips. A lot of alliteration there.
That's going to be hard.
We have updated it for the 2012 tax year, and it will be available to those who pledge at any dollar amount, whether it's $5, $50, $500, whatever you can afford. If you pledge during the On Your Money Hour next week, February 19th, you will get a free copy of the On Your Money Mini Money Booklet, 20 Tax Trimming Tips.
20 Tax Trimming Tips. All right, I think I'll get it by next week. Kevin McKinley is a certified financial planner. He is managing member of McKinley Money, LLC. And this is On Your Money. If you have a question for Kevin, 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to onyourmoney@wpr.org. DJ and Spooner sent an email and he says, I started receiving my pension in June of 2012 and chose to not have taxes withheld. How did I settle up for 2012, and how would you suggest I handle taxes in the future?
Yeah, this gets a little tricky if you haven't had any taxes withheld, because the IRS obviously wants to get their money as soon as they possibly can. They got a lot of bills to pay. So they want you to send those taxes in if you are going to end up owing for it. And you're probably going to have to not only pay the taxes you owe, of course you will, but also you might have to start having estimated taxes withheld quarterly from that amount and paid in quarterly for it. And you may be subject to a small penalty if you miss it. It's not huge, but it's enough to say, you know what, I'm going to avoid this. And what I'd recommend for most people, if you are having payments, pension payments or distributions from IRA accounts or something, please just have federal and state taxes withheld at the spot, because it makes sure that you don't have to worry about estimated taxes. And instead of getting a negative surprise on April 15th that you owe a bunch of money and perhaps penalties, it means that you may get a little bit back, and worst case scenario, you just won't anything. And the rates I typically like to use for most middle income retirees, if you will, are 15% at the federal level and about 5% for the state. And that usually washes out that you won't lose out on a huge amount of money, but you also won't have a monstrous bill when it comes due.
Kevin McKinley, certified financial planner, managing member of McKinley Money, LLC, our guest just about every Tuesday at this time on Your Money on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.
My mama told me you better shop around. Oh, yeah, you better shop around.
And today, during On Your Money, we are going to shop around for things to help our fingers use our smartphones and other gadgets. I'm Joy Cardine with financial planner Kevin McKinley, and as the use of smartphones and tablets expands, many of us have a hard time getting our fingers in the right places. I'm glad it's not just me, Kevin.
It is not just you. As a matter of fact, there is a website that has a swear word in it, so I'm not going to say it, but it's youautocorrect.com, and
yes,
it's definitely not safe for work or for most tender people, but man, there are some hilarious things that have been auto-corrected by the smartphones retyping what they think you want to say and the context and everything. I had to actually put it away because I was laughing so hard.
I was too.
Yeah, it's a great one. About 1 in 7 world citizens have a smartphone right now. About 1 in 3 U.S. citizens have one. In terms of the tablet market, about 1 in 4 U.S. citizens use a tablet. They're really great, but the problem is that with the touch screens and the fat fingers, et cetera, it's very easy to make mistakes that can be, you know, harmless and laughable in some cases, but may cause a serious problem in others. And we have some solutions to problems of fat fingers, and especially at this time of the year. And we have one of my favorite products that I've ever seen come down the line in a long time.
What is that?
Well, we'll start with a couple of these. This one I like, but it's not my favorite one. The Tech Tips. These are fingertips that are little rings that go on the tip of your finger, and they have a little kind of a stylus, if you will, right on the point, so that you can still touch, but it'll be much more accurate. It's a small little tip, and it's especially good for people who have fingernails, which aren't generally conducive to hitting the buttons correctly,
okay,
or their fingernails are rounded, and so they can't actually hit the right button for it. So they are 4 for $9.99 in shipping and handling, and it's available at usetechtips.com. Usetechtips.com. And again, we'll have a link to that link at onyourmoney.com later on today.
You know, someone told me to get a stylus, Kevin, and I'm so bad, I didn't even know what that was.
Well, now you do, and you don't even need one. So you can just get these tech tips on your fingertips and clack, clack, clack.
I get it. So, and why is this such a problem? Why are my fat fingers such a problem this time of year?
Well, not your as your husband's told you when you ask him, do my fingers look fat? And he said, no, you look fantastic.
Right.
It's too cold to take the gloves off outside right now. If you need to dial a phone or you need to check a map or look at an email or something. So, there is a solution to that. Even if you use your fingers when it's cold, your fingers may be too dry when you're outside in the cold. You can lick your fingers to get more conductivity, but that's kind of an unsanitary solution. Instead, try Gilder gloves, and especially the urban style. These cost about $16. They're very highly rated gloves, and they are not only warm and everything and nice knit gloves, but they also have conductive fingertips on the end, so you can use any part of your hand or any part of the glove fingertips to keep your hands warm, but still be able to use your smartphone or your tablet if you're outside.
Now I know how much my sister spent on my Christmas present.
Did you get Gilder gloves?
I got a glove that I can use on my smartphone. I'm not positive it's a Gilder glove, but it works. It really does. It's great. So now, what is your favorite product?
This is the High Fun glove, which is a typical winter glove, and it does have conductive tips on the fingers. But better yet, it is Bluetooth compatible so that you can put a little adapter in your smartphone, tuck your smartphone away, and then you can take your hand and you can stick your thumb up and then stick your pinky out in the universal sign language for telephone. And there is a microphone in the pinky and there is an earpiece in the thumb so that you can walk around outside talking into your hand in the universal sign of I'm talking on the phone right now, and it's legitimate. Yes, people will think you're crazy, but at least your hands will be warm.
Oh, my gosh. That's also sort of the hang loose surfer dude.
It is also the hang loose sign. That's right. And that's $70 at thinkgeek.com. And I don't walk many places, but I'm very tempted to get one of these anyway just because I want. And I know right now, tens of thousands of people, Joy, are actually putting their hands in the motion to look at this and go, you know what?
Bill will tell you. Cool. I'm doing it right now. I am, because I think I'm going to have to check that out. I'm Joy Cardine with Kevin McKinley. This is On Your Money. Time now for more of your personal finance questions for Kevin. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to onyourmoney@wpr.org. Tammy is our next caller. Tammy in Milwaukee. Hello.
Hi. I'm calling about a question. I just had my taxes done, and I usually put money into an IRA, and this year I contributed to a 401k as well, and I was going to tell her how much I wanted to put in for the IRA. She said you cannot put any deductions. You can't put any contributions into an IRA because you had a 401k at work this year. So I was very confused. I didn't know that you couldn't do both.
Yeah, some people can, but it depends on your income. And Tammy, you probably don't want to reel your income on the air, but usually the income is somewhere in the $50,000 to $60,000 range for married couples filing jointly, and then you still may be able to make a tax deductible IRA contribution and contribute to a tax deductible plan at work. But generally, if your income is over those amounts, then you can't make the tax deduction to the IRA. And what I'd prefer that you do at that point is still make the Roth IRA contribution because you don't get a break on it. But again, at least the earnings grow tax deferred and then it's tax free when you pull it out in retirement. A lot of people come to me and they've been given advice that in situations like Tammy's, if indeed they can't make a tax-deductible contribution, they make an after-tax contribution to the IRA. And while that's certainly possible, it can really make a big headache down the road when you start pulling money out of the IRA because you have to account for that after-tax portion. I'd just as soon have you use a Roth IRA and definitely use it for the spouse if you are indeed married as well. And again, the great thing about making a contribution to a Roth IRA is you can always pull the contributions back out whenever you want with no taxes or penalties whatsoever. So even if you just have some money in your savings account, you might want to slide it into the Roth IRA, and then if you need it, you can pull the contributions back out again with no taxes or penalties.
All right, Tammy, hope that works for you. Thanks for calling. Al in Milwaukee is with us now. Hello, Al.
Hello. I believe in the past a person could pay back their Social Security to to, in a sense, delay to later years receiving it, and therefore receive higher payments. Is that still possible?
It is, but it's been restricted severely. It used to be just about indefinite that you could take Social Security at 62, collect all those payments, and then technically at age 70, pay those payments back to Social Security and then start over with the new, much higher amount. And when they made several changes to the Social Security program, Alan, about 3 or 4 years ago, they eliminated that change greatly. What you can do is it's basically you can get a do-over, but it's really almost a matter of weeks, not years anymore. So if you've been taking it for more than a year or so, it's almost impossible to go back and start over with a new higher amount.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
All right. Thanks, Al, for the call. We'll move now to Laura in Arpin. Hello, Laura.
Hi there. I have a credit card that I haven't used for years. And I was wondering about whether I should keep it open because I understand that, you know, that amount of credit is beneficial to my credit score. But then I also wonder, is it beneficial enough to run the risk of, you know, somehow somebody getting that number and using the card and us not knowing it right away?
No, right. That's a good point. Is it a like a store card, like a department store card, or is it an actual bank-issued card?
It's an actual Visa card.
Okay, it's a Visa card. You can close it. If you close it, make sure that it goes on your credit report as showing that you closed it, that it was at your request, not at the issuer's request. That's a common mistake made on credit reports, and it can affect it quite a bit if they think that the lender broke up with you rather than the other way around. And then if you say, well, I want to keep this open, but I am worried about someone getting a hold of it, you can get a fraud alert. Call the bank up and say, you know, if you get any activity on this, and people get bugged by this. I actually really like it, getting a call saying, hey, we see that you bought something. You know, you paid $70 for a glove that has a phone and a receiver in the fingertips. That can't be legitimate. We'll cancel for it. No, I really did buy it. But they'll just call you and say there's use going on with this that isn't consistent with how you've normally used the account, and you can then say yes it is or no it isn't. In terms of closing, it doesn't affect your credit score that bad. In some cases, it can even help people who have a low credit score to get rid of that available credit because the credit report is less worried about you using credit irresponsibly if you don't have it in front of you. But you can do a credit fraud alert, and then you can also do a credit freeze, which would prevent them from getting any new information. What did we set up? We set up a tiny URL with a website, but I'll put that up at onyourmoney.com as to how to get freeze your credit report so people can't use any of that information to take out a new credit card in your name.
Okay, thank you very much.
All right, thank you, Laura. Yeah. It reminds me, Kevin, I did last week. I was out of town. I was in Georgia, actually, for a family medical emergency. And I tried to make a purchase at a large national discount store. And their credit machine wasn't working properly. It was like it wouldn't it wasn't letting me sign. The screen would go away before I could sign for it. So I tried a couple times and then I just gave up and tried a different card and it worked. And I got calls from both of the credit card companies saying, "What's going on? How come you're trying? You know, we want to make sure you were indeed trying to make this purchase in Georgia." So I thought they were on the ball. So.
Yeah, I like that. It's a pain and a hassle, and you don't want to be accused of doing something, you know, illegal. But I like it that they're on top of that. And people, keep in mind, even when someone does make fraudulent charges to your card, and if it does get through, generally, if you can quickly prove that you are not the person who made those charges, you will not be responsible for them. But what that does mean is you have to look at your statement at least every month and hopefully more often online to make sure that there are charges on there. The only charges on there are ones that you made and that you can quickly dispute anything that you didn't make.
Yeah. Al in Madison is with us now. Hello, Al.
Hello. Thank you for accepting my call. And I had a question for Kevin, and it deals with income taxes and filing them. In 2011, I moved to Florida and became a resident down there. My wife stayed in Wisconsin, had a full-time job, and I was wondering how we can file our federal income taxes together.
That is a good question, Al, and I'm actually not sure in that situation. It's a very common one, especially when people are transitioning from one state to another, or wisely living where it's most advantageous to the two of you to do it. You can still file. Are you talking about your federal taxes or state or what?
The federal, because in Florida, not being a tax state, and Wisconsin being a tax state, it's going to be difficult to file the federal return when you have to report your state.
Yep. Do you use a CPA, Al?
No, I'm sorry, I don't. We've been doing it for years with using TurboTax.
Okay. I would recommend this might be a good subject for a CPA in part, not just, and especially for someone who can say to you, yes, I have clients who have kind of this dual citizenship, if you will. And a lot of people do, because there are a lot of snowbirds who, you know, have residents in Wisconsin and stay a lot of, in Florida or Arizona or someplace. But you want to make sure you have someone that's probably from Wisconsin. You're more likely to find a CPA in Wisconsin who can help deal with Florida's laws rather than vice versa, because the Florida CPA would say, why on earth do you live in Wisconsin? What's the point of that? Especially this time of the year. So, yeah, I'd look for a CPA in your area and just ask that question. And part of it is because, yeah, it's going to cost you, you know, from a few hundred to several hundred dollars probably. But there might be some opportunities in there that you're missing that TurboTax just can't ask of you.
Thanks, Al, and good luck to you. We have just a couple minutes left here, but Lucas in Millville emails, I'm 34 and I want to get started on a retirement plan. How do I get started with my age bracket? Maybe where does he start as somebody in his mid-30s?
He should definitely look at his employer's plan if he has a 401k or 403b, if he works for a kind of a nonprofit, education, government, hospital, etc. But that is the easiest way to get started. And Lucas, it's great to start as early as you can. You are not old when it comes to retirement savings. You're young. And so the quicker you start, the better. I'd rather have you start with a very small amount, something you can afford, and get in the habit of putting a little bit aside. And the great thing about using that pre-tax at-work plan, if you have one, is that you'll probably save, if you're in the middle income brackets, you'll probably save about 20 cents at least in taxes for every dollar you get into that pre-tax plan. Meaning if you can put $5,000 in that plan, it's still your money. Yes, it's kind of, you know, sequestered away from you, but it's still your money. And you, by putting $5,000 in, you may cut your income tax bill that year by $1,000 to $1,500. Plus, if you work for a private employer who does match contributions, you get that money on top of it as well. And if you say, well, I just want to do this on my own, then you'd want to go and set up an IRA or a Roth IRA. If you're in the upper income and you can afford to kick the money aside, IRA is better to get the tax break. Otherwise, if you're, you know, kind of living hand to mouth, which is certainly understandable, a lot of people are right now, you might want to use that Roth IRA so that you don't get the tax break, but you do, you are able to get the money back out in the contribution form whenever you want.
Way to go, Lucas. Good luck to you. Time for the website of the week, Kevin.
Well, we mentioned TurboTax, and the IRS is great, but in terms of figuring out tax information quickly and easily, TurboTax.com can not only give you lots of tax information, but for about $50 to $100, it can do all your taxes for you, find you other deductions you're missing. TurboTax.com will have that up, but OnYourMoney.com later on today.
And very quickly next week, a special tax trimming show.
That's right. Pledge Drive 20 Tax Trimming Tips on Your Money, Mini Money booklet to every single person who pledges.
Time for four more words before we go.
Spend less. Have more.
Kevin McKinley, Certified Financial Planner, Managing Member of McKinley Money LLC. And yes, back with us next week for another edition of On Your Money. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.